That's off. This is on. Okay. I'm going to come down here because there's not very many people. But I also am going to ask something of you. I need everybody to move up. I can't talk to people way in the back. You don't have to fill the front bench, but let's like start at the second one here. And let's just bump, 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 bump. Fill them up. Good to be closer together this morning. I was thinking of doing some other visuals, so you might see I've got something here. This is my very crude rendition of a what? Any of the kids, what is this? Any idea? Okay, what? Well, it might look. What'd you say? It is. It's a scroll. And those are called seals. Anybody ever used like a wax seal? Those of you who have gotten married in the last couple years might have. But that's about it. That's usually where I see them anymore these days is, you know, you put your fancy little envelope and you close it and then you seal it with wax. So that's what these are. These are, there's seals. Anybody want to count them? How many? Seven, that's right. Now, there's a good reason for this, and you'll find out. So I put this together just as a visual, because we're going to read today. We're going to talk about a scroll. And it's actually a very significant scroll in world history. This scroll will play a part in every single one of your lives. My life, your life, every single one of us will be affected by this scroll. Not this one, but the one that represents. So something I'm not going to do because there's not enough people to do it. If we had a full house, I might do it. But I want to help create a visual again. So this, we're in Revelation chapter 5, by the way. And this is all taking place in the throne room of heaven. It starts in chapter 4. When John is called up, and I'm going to do a little bit of review. I'll pull an Austin this morning, do a little review here in a little bit. But I was thinking of how to create a visual of what's going on here. Problem is, it would take me, 30 people, actually 31 if we count John in, to make this visual up here. And that's pretty much everybody we've got, and there'd be nobody to see the visual, right? But you can imagine with me. So even the children, I'll try to do it like this. So let's imagine this thing right here is a throne. It's, you know, it's not, but let's imagine that it is. And this is where God sits. So you have God the Father sitting on the throne. And there is, it says in chapter 4, there's four creatures around the throne, one on each side. So I can imagine there's one over here. There's one back here, there's one over here somewhere, and then there's one down here. And they're odd-looking creatures. In chapter 4 there, it says, around the throne, on each side of the throne, are four living creatures full of eyes in front and behind. The first living creature like a lion, second like an ox, the third with the face of a man, and the fourth living creature like an eagle in flight. And the four living creatures, each of them with six wings, are full of eyes all around and within, and day and night they never cease to say, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come." So you've got those four creatures around the throne, and then you've got 24 elders. And I don't know how they're around. I don't know if this is like a circle completely around, or if it's like a U shape. I don't know. it doesn't tell us, and it really doesn't matter, but there's 24 elders seated on their own thrones all out around the throne. So if you can use your imagination, this is what John saw. So he was called up into this heaven. At the beginning of chapter 4, it says, "After this I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven, and the first voice which I had heard speaking to me like a trumpet said, 'Come up here, and I will show you what must take place after this.'" So he goes up there, walks through the door, and then pretty much up until chapter 5 here, we're going to read in just a little bit, he's just describing what he sees. It's like he walks in the door, and this is what he sees. And I would guess this door is not like the kind of door we're used to seeing, you know, about this tall and this wide. I'm just imagining the kind of door that is a gate to a city. A lot of you have probably seen pictures of what gates looked like over in the Middle East in ancient times. One of the big ones is it called the Gate of Ishtar? It's in Babylon. There's one part of the wall still standing, and it's a huge gate, and it's covered all over with these like blue tiles, like basically like creates a mosaic, and they're bright blue, not just light blue. They're amazing, and it's a very big spectacle. And I can just imagine that this door is maybe something like that. There's something, a grand door, and you know, John steps through this, and he starts to see all this. He sees God sitting on the throne, and he's got the rainbow around him, and all that stuff, and all these creatures and people. So that's chapter 4. He sees this stuff. So now we're going to zoom in just a little bit. And John is going to continue here describing what he sees. "Then I saw in the right hand of him who was seated on the throne a scroll." So it was in his right hand. "A scroll written within and on the back, sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming with a loud voice, 'Who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals?'" I'm going to stop just for a little bit. Something I don't have on this scroll is there's an interesting thing here that it, in the description of the scroll. It says it is written within and on the back. Both sides are written. Most times when we see a scroll, you know, what's written is on the inside. Even though there's actually nothing written on the inside of this one. But this scroll is basically covered in writing inside and out. And this is basically a symbol. There's actually another place. I think it's in Daniel. I didn't write this down in my notes. I should have. I think it's in Daniel where it's talking about a scroll as well. And that one, it describes it the same way. It's written both sides. And it simply signifies completeness. Like, it's all there. Like, everything that is needed, there's nothing else. It's full. It's complete. There's no blank spaces. There's nothing that needs to be yet filled out. It's full. Completely. For the rest of this, I want you to do, if at all possible, close your eyes and picture this scene in your head. It's going to look a little different for everybody. But just close your eyes, picture this scene, and imagine yourself maybe in the place of John as you're coming in here and you're seeing what's going on. Just do your best to create that visual in your mind as I read this. Okay, so there was one. I'm going to just start over. "Then I saw in the right hand of him who was seated on the throne a scroll written within and on the back, sealed with seven seals. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming with a loud voice, 'Who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals?' And no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll or to look into it. And I began to weep loudly because no one was found worthy to open the scroll or to look into it. And one of the elders said to me, "Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." And between the throne and the four living creatures and among the elders, I saw a lamb standing as though it had been slain, with seven horns and with seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. And he went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each holding a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, "Worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals. For you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation. And you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth." Then I looked, and I heard around the throne and the living creatures and the elders the voice of many angels numbering myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing." And I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea and all that is in them saying, "To him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever." And the four living creatures said, "Amen." And the elders fell down and worshiped. Father in heaven, I just want to ask you that you would lead us through this description of what is going on, went on, will go on someday there in the throne room of heaven. And Jesus, just as we are down here on earth today, this is where we are. We're present right here. In just that way, you are right now present in this very place that we're talking about, the throne room of heaven. And I don't know if you're standing there as a lamb today or if you're sitting at the right hand of your Father. I don't know how you are there today, but you're there. You are as present in that place as we are in this place. Help us to grasp the gravity of what's going on here. Just bring us into a place of awe and worship as we go through this today. In your name I pray, amen. I discovered there's, obviously we don't know exactly how this scroll looks up there, but I discovered there's a good chance that the seals are not like this. This is a good visual because everybody understands it's a scroll and it's got seven seals and you can count them. But there's a good possibility, and I think it makes a lot of sense, that the scroll in heaven is actually sealed a little differently than this. So if you imagine, a scroll is something that you have to, you know, you have to unroll it in order to see all the writing that's on it. And you've probably seen some of the Torah scrolls that, like, Jewish rabbis read in synagogues. They've actually got two sides on them to where you can, you know, you roll them both at the same time. So you're unrolling one side and rolling up on the other side. And you, that's how you move back and forth to different parts of the scroll. I don't know if this one's like that or not. But here's what makes a lot of sense. So what is laid out, something is in this scroll. Okay, there is something very significant. And it doesn't exactly, it's not like it says here, "And he read from the scroll and it said this." So So it doesn't tell us exactly what it says, but I think it's kind of obvious. Whatever is in this scroll ends up playing out over the next number of chapters, and we're going to be there for a long time. There's, with every seal that is broken, there's events that take place. But anyway, back to the description of how the scroll is sealed. I think it's a good chance, from what I was reading, that the scroll is, it's more like, say you open it up all the way, so you've got all the information, and then you start rolling it shut from the end, as it were, which would probably be from this side, because Hebrew is written opposite from English. Well, you read it this way instead of this way. But anyway, so you roll it up until the events contained in the seventh seal are done. And then the wax is poured, and you roll it over that seal. That makes sense? And then you've got the next part, which is the sixth one. This is going in reverse. And then you roll that all the way until the sixth one is in the scroll. And then you seal it, and you roll it over the seal again. And you continue doing that down to the beginning. And so the seals are actually like inside the scroll. You can't see them on the outside. The seventh, the first seal you could, because it's the one on the outside. I don't know, but it makes a lot of sense, because as he breaks the seals, there is, you know, in this I'd have to break all seven of them to even open any of it. But he breaks open the first seal, and then these events take place. And we'll get to those. Those aren't really important for today. I think there's also a good possibility that this scroll is mentioned other places, at least one other place in Scripture. If you go back to Daniel chapter 12, this is the very end of the book of Daniel. And just as a note, when you read some of these things in Daniel here, it calls it a book, and in Revelation it calls it a scroll. If you go into the King James Bible, it actually says book in both places. So in Revelation chapter 5 today, it says a book. And there's places where the words that are translated are used in either situation. So in the Old Testament, that word is translated book in Daniel. It can mean book or booklet or scroll. It doesn't really matter. But in this context, I think it makes a whole lot more sense that it's a scroll, because there's a whole lot more scrolls in use back then than they are now. And the way they were sealed is something that was more commonly understood than it is now. So a seal, I'm going to talk a little bit about what a seal is. A seal is, it's something that it basically denotes ownership. So let's go to a very practical way to understand it. So go back in time, or even do it now. It doesn't really matter. Let's say I'm a potter, and I make pottery. And I form this thing out of clay. And then a lot of times today, like if you have a cup or anything that is made by hand, if you turn it over and look on the bottom, the potter usually writes his name or something. There's a mark put on that piece of pottery that denotes who made it. That's one way seals were used. And they were not always just these stamp seals. Like this kind of seal is a round one. You know, you pour your wax on and you put it down into it, leave it for a little bit to harden, and then you pull it off and you've got the seal. There were also seals that are called cylinder seals, and they would be little cylinders of varying sizes. Cylinder obviously is something round, and they would be carved on all sides. Like you'd carve the name or a symbol or something on that, which you'd actually have to carve it in reverse, which would be interesting. And then you'd have your clay or whatever your soft, your clay or your wax that you want to put the seal in, drip it on, and then you roll that thing through that, and it ends up making the impression, you know, a longer impression on there. I don't know which kind of seals were used for this, but it doesn't really matter. But anyway, seals were something like if there was an official correspondence, like if a king would send instructions to one of his lower magistrates or something, you know, he'd write it down on a scroll or something, parchment paper, you know, roll it up and put this seal on it. And then it was a high crime to break that seal. The only people who could break it, really, obviously the seal denotes the ownership of the one who made it, but the one who it is being sent to also kind of has to be authorized to open it, which you'd probably know if it's okay for you to break it. But if it is not for you to open, you may not open it. And in some of the, for instance, in some of my reading, in England, you know, a while ago, they still actually use seals in England, stamp seals. But it was considered a offense punishable by death to try to copy or impersonate or use that seal in any way, like the royal seal. And, you know, it's very obvious if a seal is broken. Like, if it's broken, it means it's been tampered with. Someone unauthorized has looked into that. So back to Revelation. Oh, no, I'm in Daniel. So in Daniel, it's talking about this book that he is given, or he's whatever. And actually, at one point he says, stop, don't say anymore what's in this thing. Seal up what's in the book. This is only for the time of the end. It's not for now. You sealed up and wait. And I think it's the same scroll. That scroll that Daniel saw in the book of Daniel was then sealed up. And the way it looks is it's actually Daniel himself that sealed it. And then we get all the way forward to the book of Revelation. And we have this scroll. Now, this chapter, you know, when I first started reading it, I'm like, okay, so what? Yeah, it's like it's telling a story. How does it, like, what's in it? How do you preach out of this? Like, what's there for us? And I began to realize there's a lot of emotion and a lot of angst contained in this. So when he first sees the scroll and he hears the angel asking, who is worthy to open the scroll and break its seals? There's no one to open this. There's something essential, like there's important information in here that I've got to know, but there's nobody authorized to open it. And he says he begins to weep loudly. Well, why? I came up with a couple of illustrations to kind of help capture the emotion that John's feeling and why he's feeling this. So think about it like this. I have two situations, and you can imagine different ones. Think about there's a nice big house in a gated on a gated estate, and there's big walls. You know, you've seen these probably over in medieval Europe. There's these castles, and they've got this stone wall, like huge stone wall around them, and there's a gate. In order to get in there, you've got to go through the gate. That's it. Well, this gate is locked. And whether it's a combination, we understand combination locks today, whether it's combination lock or it's a keyed lock, doesn't matter. The person who has the key, no one knows where he is. No one knows who it is. And then imagine that you're outside the gate and your family is in that house. And the house is on fire. And you can't get in the gate. It's locked, shut. And the one who has the key is nowhere to be found. There's only one person who knows how to get in there. And you don't know where to find him. You feel it welling up a little bit inside you? Like, I think that's the kind of emotion that John is feeling. I don't even know if he understands it. I don't understand it, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's saying. Whatever is contained in the scroll is so important. You've got to know. Your family is in that burning house. You've got to get in there to figure out how to set them free. But you can't get in. The one authorized to go through the gate is nowhere to be found. And here it says, they searched everywhere. No one in heaven or on earth or under the earth was able to open the scroll to look into it. I think that's important to grasp. Because it stamps forever in the hardest possible concrete that there is only one answer to this problem. There's a problem here. There's no one to open the scroll. There's no one that has the key. No one can accomplish what needs to be done. No one. And John felt that. So he began to weep. And then, this is when it takes a turn for the better. One of the elders said to me, "Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered, so that he can open the scroll and its seven seals." So all of a sudden, the game changes. The house is on fire, and someone comes, and he's like, "Yep, I've got the key. I'm authorized to get in here. I can get in here." And I can just imagine, like, what kind of relief would wash over you as this person unlocks the gate, and you now have access. You can now do something. So then John looks, and he sees standing there off to the side a lamb, as though it had been slain, with seven horns and with seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. What's this thing of horns and eyes? There's a lot of horns and eyes in Revelation and Daniel. So a horn is a symbol of power and authority. And if you look in a lot of the dreams that Daniel had, you know, you've got the goat with the little horn, you've got the goat with the big horn. It very, very much corresponds with power and authority. You know, in Daniel, the bigger horn comes out and takes out the goat with the smaller horn. It makes sense that that's what it is. So seven, there's a lot of sevens in here too. So seven, I don't know why, but I guess God chose this. Seven is a number of completion. Like it's the perfect number. Perfect means complete or full. And so if he has seven horns, it means he's got all the power, right? Not just a little bit, not most of it, all of it. Like the complete power that is out there to be had, it's his. All of it belongs to him. And then eyes are, you know, pretty easy to understand, I think. Eyes are for seeing, right? Eyes are for seeing and understanding. That's kind of what they signify. So he's got all the power, and he's got all the understanding. He's got it all. So this lamb then goes. He is the one authorized because of what he has done. He accomplished something. So he goes and he takes the scroll from the right hand of him who was seated on the throne. And when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. I can just imagine that's the same, when he gets that scroll, it's the same time as when that person puts that key into that gate and click, it unlocks. And those, they fell down, and it's like, finally, someone is here that can solve this problem. And they begin to sing a new song. And they say, worthy are you to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and by your blood you ransomed people for God from every tribe and language and people and nation. And you have made them a kingdom and priests to our God, and they shall reign on the earth. That's a whole sermon in itself. But I probably won't go into that a whole lot today. This harkens back, this whole ransom people for God from every tribe, language, people, and nation. It ties in a little bit with our Sunday school today. This wall of hostility between Jews and Gentiles is broken down. But if you go back to way back close to the beginning, a couple thousand years after the beginning, but after the new beginning. So you've got the flood, and then you have people begin to multiply, but they're all of one language. They're all one people. And then we have the Tower of Babel. And God, at that point, does not like at all what's going on. So he comes down, and he scrambles the languages, and basically that's the beginning of the sending people across the earth. And in Deuteronomy 32, I think it's verse 8, this is the Song of Moses, which is kind of it's a song of the history of the world and Israel up to that point. It says, when he divided up the nations at Babel, he divided them up according to the number of the sons of God. So it's like each, and when you look in Genesis, if you go back to Genesis, I didn't count through these, but the people that have, say, in the table of nations there after the flood, where it says, you know, and this person became this nation, all that, there's about 70 of them. And it's fairly well understood by a lot of Bible scholars that when it says divide them up according to the number of the sons of God, that's about 70 nations. About 70 of... I won't even really go into that. It's kind of a whole thing in itself. Maybe sometime I'll preach on that again. I did a couple years ago. But anyway, so there's these beings, angels, whatever, that God divided these up, and they are, you know, this angel now is in charge of this people group, and this angel is in charge of this people group. And you notice God himself, God the Father, he did not choose a people in this divvying up. He divided them all out. But then what he did, not long after that, well, hundreds of years, but it's not long in our way of looking at it, he went and he picked Abraham out. Now see, Abraham was a part of one of these nations that was over here, that was under the authority of this son of God. And he chose Abraham, or Abram at that point. And he said, I'm going to make a people of you. I'm going to make my own people out of you. And you know, throughout the Old Testament, the plan of God at that point was to have his own people. Now there is tidbits here and there that say what his real ultimate plan is, and that is to bring people from every nation into this family of God, which that's where we were in Sunday school today. The Jews didn't particularly care for that at that point. But this is his plan, to take for himself a people from every tribe, language, tongue, nation, from everywhere. And right here, it's finally coming to fruition. Whatever's in this scroll is the end of it, or it's the completion of everything. And they knew this. The 24 elders and the four living creatures, they knew this because they say it in their song. They knew this is what was happening. And basically, the rest of the chapter is the 24 elders, and actually it says myriads and myriads of angels. It's not just them. There is then this worship and honor and proclaiming majesty to Jesus, to God. And it's also interesting, in verse 12, they say this as well. Actually, this is the myriads. Let me go back to verse 11. Then I looked and heard around the throne and the living creatures and the elders the voice of many angels numbering myriads of myriads and thousands of thousands. I don't know how many that is. In King James Version, it says 10,000 times 10,000, which is 100 million. I don't know. I think the point is, it's just saying there's a lot. Lots and lots. And this is what they're saying. They say, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing." How many is that? Yeah. I never noticed that until I was getting ready for this. There's another one. Seven things, and I don't think it's a coincidence that it's seven things. And I think it's simply, once again, saying, he's got it all. Everything there is to be had, he's got it all. He's got all the power, all the wealth, all the wisdom, all the might, all the honor, all the glory, and all the blessing. That word blessing is actually eulogia, which is where we get the word eulogy from, the end, you know? He's got everything. He's got everything from the beginning to the end. And I think the main thrust of this chapter is to bring us to a place like the 24 elders and the creatures. The only thing left to do is just to fall down and to praise him. Because he can open what's in here. What is in here is the completion of our salvation. We, in Romans, it talks about the whole creation is groaning, waiting for the revealing of the sons of God. We all know something's broken, right? We'll listen to a song here in a little bit at the very end that I think it's actually based on this chapter. And I think does a very, very good job at capturing the emotion that is in this. The world is broken, and we all know it. And it hit me yesterday morning. How many, this is kind of a funny thing, how many of you know, have heard the name Oliver Anthony? In the last 2 weeks, 10 days. If you haven't, well, I don't have to tell you, but just your curiosity will probably get the better of you after this. In simple terms, he's a no-name person, wrote a song, sung it with his guitar, and he posted it on YouTube. And I didn't look this morning, but I think as of yesterday, 10 days in, it had 23 million views. So it's like, goes everywhere. Just a warning, it's a little crude. But it's actually pretty good. And then, my wife has been on this, she likes to listen to Gaither songs in the evening especially. Where's Viola? She would appreciate that. Wait, she was here. She left. Oh, she's in the bathroom or whatever. Anyway, there's one of the songs that she found recently, and it's called, what is the name of it? Make the Morning Worth the Midnight? Does that ring a bell to anybody? It's one of the songs that Bill or Gloria, I don't know who wrote it, but one of them wrote it, and it's a very simple song. But it's also talking about, you know, it feels like sometimes that it's dark, we're in the midnight. We just want the morning to come. We want the sun to shine. We want all, and it's a good, clean song, okay? But yesterday morning, it hit me. These two songs are saying the same thing. A little bit differently. You know, Bill's song has a little bit more of the answer into it. This whole Oliver Anthony song, it captures what people feel. That's why it goes everywhere so quickly, because people hear it and it connects with them, because we know it's broken. There's no answer in his song. He's just expressing the problem. And it just hit me yesterday morning. The answer to what he is longing for and to what all the people, okay, it's 23 million now. I don't know, by the time this is all said and done, who knows how many hundreds of millions of people are going to see that around the world. But it just captures what's going on. It captures the problem. The answer is in here. That's what they're looking for. That's what the world is looking for. They don't even know it. They think the answer is going to come in electing a different president or fixing something in the governments and all stuff like that. That's not the answer. I'm not saying it doesn't help, like practically speaking on a day-to-day basis, but that's not what we're longing for. What the world is longing for is for someone to open the scroll, because the answer is in the scroll. And there's one person who is worthy to open it. I'm just going to end there. I'm going to sit down. Go ahead and play the song. This is not new. You all know it. But just close your eyes and once again, imagine the throne room, because that's where it took place.